list. That was very helpful. I was over there going, oh.
So it was in order, right?
Yeah. I thought they would have moved into your house already.
Yeah.
I thought you already had most park rows in the front of your house. And the whole Samoan community in my
life.
Yes. We have a family that's living in the house.
We still have some chairs up here, up front. Don't be afraid. This isn't like our service or our sacrament service meetings. You know, you don't need to sit in the back row. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. We'd like to welcome you. My name is John Taylor, and I'm the Director of Interfaith Relations within the Public Affairs Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I am honored to be with the real star of this program. That's Michael von Rosen, who's the Director of Area Relations. And we collaborate an awful lot on these efforts. It's good to see all of you here. Many of our friends from OGC and other parts of the world here, but would like to welcome you. And what we'd like to do today is we'd like to chat, if we could, a little bit about the importance of interfaith relations and the role that those relationships can play specifically as it relates to religious freedom. And so I'm going to just take a few minutes here and give you a bit of an overview of some of the efforts that the church has made over the past several years, and talk to you a little bit about the interfaith outreach efforts. And then after that, Michael is going to take some time and show you some of the tools that have actually been developed to help us understand as we reach out and work in these efforts. And then we'll share a few war stories with you and then go from there. So again, it's wonderful to be with you. And let's see. Let's check and make sure this works. The church has always been involved in outreach efforts and with interfaith efforts. There's been, I think, a desire to develop better working relationships with people of different faiths. I think President Monson is one of the best examples of that. He has reached out to many, and as a matter of fact, is quite well known for his relationships, for example, that he's been able to develop over the years with our Catholic friends. He considers those relationships very dear to his heart. And so over the last few years, there's been an effort really to formalize that effort more. And so about 5 or 6 years ago, members of the Quorum of the Twelve approached our department and asked us if we would develop a more formal outreach effort where we could go out and meet different people of different leaders of different faiths. And the goal was not really to focus on large numbers. The goal was to try to develop meaningful two-way relationships. I think that there was a view that there were going to be more and more issues that we would all be having to address in the future. And it was interesting because, there was a sense that if we could overcome some of the barriers that had existed in the past, that there were many areas of commonality that could bring us together where we could work together. And so I'm just going to show you a few pictures and tell you about some of these. This is Elder Christofferson just last year when he went out and met with Cardinal O'Malley, who is out of Boston. And Cardinal O'Malley is just a wonderful individual, very humble in nature, and he has been one of the key people that has advised the Pope. And so he was, we wanted to meet him. He had expressed an interest in meeting with us. And so when Elder Christofferson was back in Boston, we went and met him and discussed a number of issues, including religious freedom issues and what he viewed as going to be important from the Pope's perspective as one of their core advisors. Please come in. There's seats. This is Elder Perry back at the headquarters, and we've got very tender feelings right now with just losing Elder Perry and then, of course, President Packer. But this is Elder Perry back at the world headquarters for the Seventh-day Adventists. And a number of months ago, he went and met, and they had a delegation that greeted him and Elder Rasband and a few others from the church, and opened some wonderful discussions with our friends from the Seventh-day Adventists. We have much in common with them and highly respect them. This is Elder Cook, actually, down in Florida, the Fort Lauderdale Temple dedication. He's there with the governor of Florida. But Elder Cook was personally responsible for taking a whole series of Jewish groups through the temple and explaining the principles of the temple. This is, again, Elder Christofferson meeting with Cardinal Timothy Dolan at an event, and Robbie George. Cardinal Dolan became very good friends of Elder Perry, for example, and when Elder Perry passed away, our team started to notify some of these leaders that Elder Perry had been so close to, and it was just amazing to me, the expressions of love and appreciation. We'd send out a little notice to Cardinal Dolan, and about an hour and a half later, this was Saturday afternoon, Elder Perry had passed away about 3 o'clock, about 5:30, my cell phone went off, and it was New York. And I picked up the phone, and it was Cardinal Dolan. And he said, we'll send letters and all of that. But he said, will you please pass on to the leadership of the LDS Church how heartbroken we are to lose Elder Perry and what a dear friend he was to me personally. And I said, I'm going to get emotional when I talk about this. But he said, I called him Brother Tom. And he said, I said, Cardinal Dolan, he called you Brother Tim. And he just, in his jovial manner, just broke out laughing. He said, thank you. He said, I was feeling a little down. I needed to remember Elder Perry like that. But it shows, I think, the kinds of relationships that that were developed, and most importantly, the kinds of trust. We don't agree on doctrinal issues and other things, but there was a friendship and a trust that existed between these two great leaders that have blessed both, I think, our Catholic friends and no question blessed us. This was a little luncheon that was held with President Eyring when Bishop John Wester was appointed Archbishop in Santa Fe, and many that came to pay tribute and thank him for his service in Salt Lake. Just a wonderful, marvelous relationship with our Catholic friends. Let's just play this segment where Elder Ballard talks about the importance of reaching out and being friends.
Nearly 25 years ago, the First Presidency declared, our message is one of special love and concern for the eternal welfare of all men and women, regardless of religion, belief, race, or nationality. Knowing that we are truly brothers and sisters because We are the sons and daughters of the same eternal Father. That is our doctrine, a doctrine of inclusion. That is what we believe. That is what we have been taught. Of all people on this earth, we should be the most loving, the kindest, the most tolerant because of that doctrine.
So you'll see more pieces as we continue on and talk about the importance of developing this kind of trust and relationships with our friends of different faiths. Our objective as we've gone through this has really been to, as I mentioned, build meaningful two-way relationships with leaders of other faiths that will foster working together in areas of common concern. So what are some of those areas of common concern? The very reason why we're here today, religious freedom, family, the importance of family, the importance of faith in society, and our ability to speak out and express our views in the public about those issues. So as we've gone out and met with these leaders, it's kind of interesting. The conversation usually starts like this. Now, we recognize that we do have differences of doctrine, but we respect and admire you for your stand on these issues. And we feel like if we can put those issues aside, those differences aside, and work together for a common cause, we're going to get so much more by working together than working separately. And I've watched as maybe, you know, there had been barriers before, as those barriers come down and personal relationships and trust are built in our ability to move forward on these kinds of projects. It's been quite remarkable. If you had told me a number of years ago that somebody like Dr. Al Mohler would come to Brigham Young University and speak in a general forum of this university, I probably would have questioned that. But it's just been amazing. And again, differences in the way we believe, but it's just been absolutely amazing to see that. I look at Michael Wood here and the relationships that have been developed in the Jewish community. We'll tell you a story about that here in a few minutes. But it's just amazing how these relationships have been developed that in turn are blessing so many different faiths, so many individuals throughout the world. So what has been our approach? We have formalized a whole series of outreach visits, and where when members of the Quorum of 12 are going out and visiting different cities throughout the country, we have focused on them going out and visiting with many of these interfaith religious leaders throughout the country. And it's exciting because it's been expanded now. The presidency of the 70 is now involved in it, and also our wonderful women leaders in the church are now involved in it. We just had Sister Wixom, who just had a magnificent experience down in Texas visiting a number of interfaith leaders down there. So we're grateful for the support that the leaders of the church have seen in this and the success that it's had. We do hosting at headquarters, and again, we usually try to start on at their home. So we go out to visit them, chat with them, but many of them travel a great deal, and we've always said if you're ever traveling to Salt Lake, will you please give us a day or two, because we want to spend some time with you, and we would like to have you to our headquarters, and also would love to have you down to BYU. And there's something about this campus and the students and our wonderful faculty and others that has a significant influence, I think, on the hearts of those people that come and visit. This was, I think, something else that was very significant with the incredible support of the administration of this university. There are only so many forums every year that you can invite these leaders to. You know, with the incredible demands of significant leaders from all aspects of the world that come to BYU, there was only maybe one or two opportunities that we had to invite some of these leaders to come to this campus and participate in something like a forum. So we worked with the Department of Religion and developed a lecture series called Faith, Family, and Society. And when one of these leaders is coming, we can go ahead and schedule that. And it gives us an awful lot more flexibility. And so, for example, Archbishop Chaput spoke at it, Dr. Al Mohler. We've had Dr. Ella Simmons from the Seventh-day Adventists and many more that have come to this campus and experienced that. And it's been a wonderful blessing for them. And some of their speeches, the Department of Religion is in the process right now of compiling many of those. They're going to publish them. Dr. Millett's been influential in bringing that about. I think we're going to see continued benefits from the establishment of that lecture series. And then just aligning with organizations that share our vision. That's been extremely rewarding and powerful also as we've been able to establish some of those relationships. So again, just to review some of those efforts, Bishop John Wester, that was here in Utah for about 7 years, now is in Santa Fe, has just been a dear friend of the organization and has very strong views about religious freedom, has been very supportive. I'm going to focus a bit on our Catholic friends. First of all, this is Archbishop Joseph Kurtz. He is currently the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he, again, has become a very wonderful ally in many of these efforts that we've had. He's located back in Louisville. This is Archbishop Chaput. I don't know if I said that. My staff is back there, and so they'll correct me. Now they said I mispronounced it again. So anyway, it's Chaput. There we go. Got it right. Archbishop Chaput was actually over in Denver for many years. And it was our Denver friends that developed some warm, cordial working relationships with him. He is now the Archbishop of Philadelphia. And as you know, they're going to have a visit from the Pope coming up in September. And with the relationships that have been developed there, we have Elder Christofferson, who's going to go back and present at that conference that our Catholic friends are hosting. So he's going to be talking on the family as he goes back. This is Cardinal Dolan, bigger than life, but a man of immense heart and spirit, and past president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and it was when he was serving in that capacity that many of the leaders came to know him, respect him, and admire him. This is Archbishop Auza, and he was actually here in Provo just a few months ago. He is the permanent observer mission of the Holy See to the United Nations. And we hosted him at church headquarters. He met a number of church leaders and then came down and actually gave a speech down here in Provo a few months ago. And then, of course, Pope Francis. And on Wednesday, we're going to talk a little bit about, I've been asked over lunch to chat a little bit about President Eyring's visit to the Vatican. We'll share a little bit of that experience with you. But again, to think that a senior leader of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would have the opportunity to personally greet and chat for a few minutes with the Pope was quite a remarkable experience. But once again, it goes back to relationships, because the relationship with Pope Francis actually began in Argentina and with many of our international outreach efforts that Michael is responsible for. Just moving along quickly, some other leaders that we've developed some very strong working relationships with. This is Bishop Charles Blake. He's the presiding bishop of the Church of God in Christ in Los Angeles. Dr. Russell Moore, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. This is Dr. Gene Rivers. He and his wife Jackie. He's pastor of the Azusa Christian Community in Boston. But they have been very instrumental in bringing together many of the different families of black churches here in the United States together, focusing specifically on religious freedom. And so he's been very influential with also developing the strong relationships that we have with Bishop Blake. Dr. Gary Greenenbaum, out of Southern California, he was the director of interfaith relations for the AJC, the American Jewish Committee, and I think Michael knows him quite well. And Gary has been a very, very dear friend of the church, very close friends with Elder Christofferson, and has been one of those quiet counselors that when we need some direction and some focus, we can quietly call Rabbi Greenenbaum and get some advice. You'll see a little video clip of him in a second. This is Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik, one of the leading academics and up-and-coming leaders within the Jewish faith. He is out of New York City and is actually the chief rabbi of the congregation, now I'm going to mispronounce this, Sheareth Israel in New York City. And we met with him again just a few weeks ago, and a very influential up-and-coming leader in the Orthodox movement of the Jewish faith. This is Emeritus Chief Rabbi, actually Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs. He is the Emeritus Chief Rabbi of the Commonwealth across the pond, and has become another important ally for us. President Eyring met with him at the Vatican when he was over there, and we're hoping to maybe get him out here to BYU at some point in time, too. And another significant leader, Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, he's president of the National Christian Leadership Conference, and once again, he's on our docket to try to get him to come out. And there have been, again, an awful lot of other hosting opportunities. This is Dr. Diop, he's Associate Director of Public Affairs for the Seventh-day Adventists. This was here at BYU just a few months ago when Dr. Ella Simmons and her husband Nord were hosted here, and she gave just a wonderful speech on the importance of education. Vice President of the Seventh-day Adventists. You may recognize this individual here in the center. That's Joel Osteen, who was greeted and hosted here at church headquarters. We developed a wonderful relationship with Bishop Hayashi, the Episcopalian bishop here in Utah. We'll show you a little clip about him. And he's just one of our dear friends, and we've been able to, even though we do differ on, you know, doctrinal issues, we've been able to join together on many, many different issues. And they just hosted their national conference here. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. This was again down here at BYU when Archbishop Chaput presented down here on faith, family, and society lecture. And then again, Archbishop Auza with Governor Herbert during his visit. So what we've tried to do is we've really tried to create an alignment with like-minded organizations. And you've heard about many of them here at this conference. Of course, the Beckett Fund. We work closely with the Beckett Fund. The First Amendment Partnership, who is responsible for an effort called Faith Counts. We'll talk to you a little bit about that in a minute. The Witherspoon Institute out of Princeton. We've had a good working relationship with them. And then, of course, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, who have been very supportive in those efforts. So started with personal relationships that then create relationships with organizations and institutions that then focus on issues where we can work together, come together. And then Humanum, which is the organization that was formed coming out of the conference held at the Vatican in November of last year. You may have heard a little bit about Faith Counts. Faith Counts is an alliance of many different faiths that have come together to promote messaging, internet messaging, web messaging that just reinforces the importance of faith in one's life. We have a whole series of partners that we've come together with, including the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Seventh-day Adventists, six. Been a very strong organization that have helped us. Hillel International from the Jewish community, First Amendment Partnership, us, Franciscan University at Steubenville. All of these organizations have come together in this web-based effort. And so I'd like to just show you one piece. This is a piece about Elizabeth Smart that was put together for Faith Counts.
I have a knife at your neck. Don't make a sound. Get up and come with me. If you cry out, I will kill you and your family. I grew up in a family that instilled a very strong sense of faith in me. During the next 9 months of my kidnapping, I had no idea just how much I would have to rely upon that faith. I will never forget the first time I was raped. I will never forget how broken and shattered I felt. I felt like I had been a vase that had been smashed far beyond repair. And as I sat there, I began to think about my mom and all the different things she used to say to me came back to my memory, things that gave me hope. I remember her telling me that she would always love me. And then I remember her telling me that God would always love me. It was in that moment that I realized that I still had value, that this was something that nobody could ever take away from me. And it was that faith and that knowledge in God that He would always love me that helped me survive the next 9 months. And it continues to help me survive to this day. In my own life and in the countless other lives of survivors that I've spoken with, it has been the power of faith that has allowed us not only to persevere, but to find true peace and happiness.
Millions of views. And so just one example of some very strong messaging that we developed, some hard-hitting messaging. It's a very strong messaging that we've been able to come together and work together. Matter of fact, right now Faith Counts is doing a little video competition. We had a very generous donor that has funded it. And Lauren, I'm trying to think, we had about 125 different video entries that are just beautiful and wonderful. We're going to be able to use many of those in the coming months as we continue to work together with these different groups in this alliance. So let's move on. Let me just give you a quick update. Total followers, consistent followers on the social channels for Faith Counts is about 280,000, and total video views across the channels are 7.3 million. So for something that was just started at the end of last year, it's done very well. Now, from a leadership perspective, just a couple of thoughts. I think Matt Richards probably mentioned this morning that there have been over 8 conference talks that have focused on religious freedom. And so let's just share real quickly a couple of those thoughts. Elder Cook, down in Australia, just about a month ago said this, "My plea today is that all religions join together to defend faith and religious freedom in a manner that protects people of diverse faith as well as those of no faith. We must not only protect our ability to profess our own religion, but also protect the right of each religion to administer its own doctrines and laws." Very strong, wonderful statements that have been made. And I think an additional strong component of this really was the conference talk of Elder Hills, where he spelled out 3 things. And as we move to the next phase of the presentation, these are very critical because they answer the question, what can I do about all of this? And we talk about these relationships and how wonderful they are. They're great. But for all of us that are sitting in this room, how do we get the water to the end of the row, and what can we specifically do? And this is what Elder Hills said. "We're responsible to safeguard these sacred freedoms and rights for ourselves and our posterity. What can you and I do? First, we can become informed, be aware of issues in your community that could have an impact on religious liberty. So be informed. The next second, in your individual capacity, join with others who share commitment to religious freedom. It's exactly what we've been trying to do as an institution. We came to know each other as friends. We recognized that there were areas of commonality, and now we move forward in that commitment. Work side by side to protect religious freedom. Third, live your life to be a good example of what you believe in word and deed. And you know, I'm just looking at Dino here and thinking of your history, Dino, and the courage and the bravery that you had to take on issues. I think it reflects anyway what our leaders have said. How we live our religion is far more important than what we may say about our religion. So it's once again in the demonstration of those things. Now, how can we work together? I'm just going to give you a quick example. Last week we had the National Convention of the Episcopal Church here in Salt Lake City. And Bishop Hayashi has been magnificent. Matter of fact, you're going to see a little clip. His wife is, it's Amy McDonald. But you're going to see a little clip on some things that they did as they came to Salt Lake to serve people and to truly demonstrate their belief in their faith. So let's just watch this real quickly.
The square meal, and it starts at Welfare Square.
Everybody is smiling.
And more these days, looking out for the needs of our neighbors often begins with the relationship that exists with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and its friends in the faith community.
It's very important that people know how much good can be done when faith groups come together.
Leaders of the Episcopal Church from around the world and their spouses in Salt Lake City for the annual Episcopal General Convention joined in a service project at Welfare Square to experience firsthand what it's like to produce the basics for any kitchen of those in need. The process of making bread in the bakery, packing cheese in the dairy, producing gallons of salsa in the canned goods department, all inside Welfare Square.
This is an amazingly clean, fresh environment. I think people are really loving it.
But there's more satisfaction than just seeing the results of their labor. These items and more will be bottled, canned, and packaged up and shipped out to Hildegard's Food Pantry near downtown Salt Lake City, a special food bank and distribution center operated by St. Mark's Episcopal Church to help the hungry. And today, nearly $20,000 worth of groceries from the Latter-day Saint-operated Welfare Square are being delivered by the leaders of the Episcopal Church.
It was nice. I mean, there's nice to have helping hands.
We all are a lot more alike than we are different.
Working together is a teamwork, and I think that's what God wants.
And I think that's what God wants. It kind of sums it all up, doesn't it? Well, listen, I'm going to turn the time over to Michael von Rosen now, who is going to show you some wonderful tools that have been developed and talk a little bit more further about how you can apply these principles as you go throughout the world and in your different dealings as representatives of your faith traditions.
Oops, that's right. I'll take that. Thanks. So everything we do at headquarters, we really, in some ways, mirror all over the world, all across the areas in the United States and across the international areas. Every area internationally has a full-time director of public affairs. And then also domestically, we have called public affairs directors, hopefully to the stake level. So when we talk about interfaith outreach, we also want to be doing this at the stake level, at the mission level, at the area levels. So we have produced several videos to help people that have been called to public affairs understand interfaith relations, but also understand what these religions are to people from their own perspective. So I'll just show these videos. We can talk afterwards. This, of course, is one of our own, one of BYU's own.
There's something wonderful about your life when you come to understand another person, and you know what makes them tick, including the things that are most sacred to them. I sat in a beautiful cathedral one time with a friend of mine who was a Methodist. It was at his church. And I was just sort of blown away by the beauty of the place. But at a certain point in the service, I happened to glance over and see tears coming down the side of his face. Now, I guess I always knew he was a strong believer in his faith. I had no idea that it meant that much to him. That was an important day for me. It seemed so simple. Why didn't I know better than that? I came to appreciate that he values and treasures some things that I value and treasure about my faith. There's something precious about knowing another person, and the more we know about their soul, about their what makes them go and what drives them, what motivates them.
Next will be, this is Bishop Wester talking about Catholicism. Oops.
In essence, the Catholic Church was formed by God's love. In order to be God's love in the world today, so that God's love might draw all people together into the fullness of the heavenly banquet. Our Catholic faith teaches us that God calls certain men among the faithful for the specific ordained service of God's people. And so these men then would be go to seminary, they would be ordained a deacon, and then a priest. And then as priests, they would be able to celebrate the sacraments. I think the sacraments in general can be misunderstood. To receive Holy Communion, the body and blood of Christ, it is truly the body and blood of Christ in sacramental form. The Eucharist is the reenactment, if you will, of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So the Eucharist, therefore, is a sacramental living out of that reality.
It's basically bringing Christ into your life and then having a change brought about in you because you're there. The culmination, of course, is the Eucharist in the Mass. That's what everything is leading to. And so when the priest says, take, eat, this is my body, then you're taking Christ in. You're allowing him into your life so that he can do his healing work.
I think people might misunderstand the Catholic relationship with Mary, the Mother of God. Again, people will sometimes misunderstand and think that we're worshiping Mary, which we don't. God is the only one we worship. But we afford Mary a very special place as the Mother of God, the Mother of the Church. We are created, Catholics believe, for one thing and one thing only. To be one with God forever in heaven. That God loves us beyond distraction, more than we'll ever know, and that God wants us to be one with him. And that anything in this world that it leads us to be one with God is good. And anything in this world that takes us away from that one goal is not good.
This is Mormons and Judaism.
Jewish tradition, Jewish belief, it's interesting to talk about Jewish belief as belief. If you took 100 Jews and asked them what they believe, you might well come up with about 100 different answers.
Judaism is not monolithic. That is to say, every Jewish person that you meet doesn't believe the same way, and they don't affiliate with the same group of people. They don't go to a synagogue that has essentially the same beliefs on any given Shabbat, which is Saturday. You wouldn't expect to go into a synagogue and find people in the synagogue studying the same things. And so there needs to be some sensitivity about the basic nature of the two positions relative to authority in Judaism and Mormonism.
If you have a different way of reaching God, if you have a different tradition that tells you how to worship God and how to be one of God's children in a positive way, then however you find your way to your God is fine with me. Your God should be, your way of relating to God should be meaningful for you, just as mine is meaningful for me. Judaism is a tradition that is thousands of years old, going back to Abraham.
Abraham was, if not the father, certainly the grandfather of the Israelite people. Latter-day Saints feel a connection with them because we believe that we're quite literally descendants of Father Abraham.
Jacob has 12 sons. Those become known as the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob wrestles with the angel, and the angel, in the course of it, changes Jacob's name to Israel.
The Jewish people believe that they're descendants of the forebear of the tribe of Judah. Latter-day Saints believe that we're sort of close cousins because we believe we're descendants from some of the other tribes of Israel, predominantly Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh being his two sons. So I think that Latter-day Saints look at the Jewish people as family members. And that may or may not be true in terms of the Jewish perspective, but I think it's true from the Latter-day Saint perspective.
And then quickly, here's an evangelical perspective.
As we get to know people, as we become friends, we build relationships in which we don't want, even unwittingly, to misrepresent each other. We discover ways in which we have lumped all the diverse people of one community together, which is always very easy to do as long as you don't know a single one of them.
Latter-day Saints, because we have so many things that have been revealed to us, because we have so much through the Restoration that brings answers to questions, it's very easy for us to become rather insular, to become rather linked to ourselves, and to kind of hunker down and do our own thing. You can't do that if you want to have an impact on the world. You can't make a difference unless you get in among the people. Now, we don't have to become like or believe like all the people, but we need to be among the people. And so I think where the natural inclination for a Latter-day Saint is to just take care of your family and do your church jobs, as important as those are, I think we need to find ways to get involved in society.
I'm reminded of when it was reported that President Hinckley said to the Latter-day Saints that they ought to get to know their non-Mormon neighbors as well as they knew their Mormon neighbors. And if Latter-day Saints are in a part of the country or a part of the world where they're in a small minority, there should be plenty of people to pick from. The same would be true of evangelicals. If there are two or more individuals of varying faith communities that have begun to build friendship and establish some trust, the next level is not so much to immediately debate doctrine, but share their own personal journeys. Share what both of our communities would frequently call our testimonies. How do we recognize God having worked in our lives? What has He done? What has He said? How have we changed? Be honest enough to share our disappointments.
Many years ago, Krister Stendahl, who had been the dean of the Harvard Divinity School, some years ago, Krister Stendahl was appointed bishop of the Lutheran Church in Sweden. And then Bishop Stendahl said this, and I think this is really sound counsel. He said, if you really want to know what another person believes, what they really believe, he said, I have three suggestions. Number one, go to an active, practicing, rather knowledgeable member of that faith. Ask them. Two, he said, if you must compare, compare their best with your best. And three, and I love this phrase, he said, always leave room for holy envy. Now that's another way of saying, be willing to acknowledge the goodness that is in the lives and hearts and minds of men and women. Be ready to recognize that the evangelicals, for example, are a Jesus-centered people. We can learn something from them. Be willing to recognize that this particular faith has a devotion that is so commendable that you wish you had it. I love that phrase, holy envy.
I just want to add one more example to that. Just the other day I was looking on the church newsroom site and I noticed that Elder Nelson, one of the senior apostles, had met with Father Georgi in Moscow just a few weeks ago. And Elder Orton is here. He used to be in the area presidency of the Europe East area when I was there as well as the director of public affairs in that area. When he talks about holy envy, I had a chance with my family to go to Kostroma, where he has an orphanage, or he runs actually several orphanages. And there was a man, even though we did not have a very good relationship with the institutional church, the Russian Orthodox Church, yet here was a simple priest or simple father of the Russian Orthodox Church who I felt holy envy for. The church was helping him. When we went to visit him, he was there in a big BYU sweatshirt. I tried to correct that to a University of Utah, but I didn't have a... He had received one of the containers and one of the sweatshirts, and there was BYU. I always love when the containers from Utah arrive because half the people were Utah fans and half of them were BYU fans because all these sweatshirts were there. But just what an example. We had a chance to stay overnight in his orphanage, and he took what the church was able to provide him, and he was able to provide for the people in that small area of Russia. And he's still actively. The other day we wonder how Father Georgi's doing, and then we see the picture of Elder Nelson meeting with him. And he's still there doing good in the name of Christ. And that is a person for me that I feel holy envy for. But let's talk about opportunities. And by the way, in the previous session, the question arose, what about Muslims? Now, we also do outreach to Muslims, and we should have put some photos in. We didn't have any available right there. But Elder Holland, a few years ago, addressed a group of Muslim leaders in the UK, had a wonderful evening where they talked about commonalities and about religious freedom and how together we can lift our communities. But also in the States and across the globe, we also have relationships with Muslim leaders. And of course, also in the Middle East, where the church is slowly being established in some of the countries. Because we move slowly, because we act as we say we will, trust is building in some of those countries as well. So anyway, some of the opportunities we want to talk about. What we saw in these videos, listen, learn, and grow. I think so often we meet people of other faiths and our first thing we want to do is convert them, and we really don't listen to where they are, where their beliefs are. Let's listen, let's learn from them. That's why we had these leaders of other church kind of talk about their beliefs. Learn as much as we can. Learn, grow together. When we understand our commonalities, we all can grow together. Next, educate and share. We have wonderful materials available on Mormon Newsroom on religious freedom that we can gladly share, we can share with others and send to them and help educate our communities. Once we're aware of these issues, we can educate those people around us, and once again, we can learn from the people around us and share these things that we're learning. Become aware of issues, so kind of monitor what's going on. Once again, in the Elder Hale's quote, it says, a lot of this is we get involved as individuals. The church itself cannot get involved in every religious freedom debate as an institution, but individually we can get involved in a lot of and help educate the people around us. People that may be reading stories about religious freedom and how basically religious freedom gives you the right to discriminate. Well, if you frame it correctly and explain how religious freedom not only protects people of faith, but people without faith as well, we can be kind of a yeast helping to explain what the true meaning of religious freedom is. If you do become aware of a situation that is of impact for the church, make sure that priesthood leaders are aware of that so they can feed it up the priesthood line, and that the church can then make a decision if they want to get involved or not. But most of all, let's get together with other faiths and together lift our communities. Yeah? Yeah. That's a great point, and that's on the J. Reuben Clark. We actually have it on the Public Affairs Network as well. So there is a number. If you become aware of something, just to make a phone call and let the attorneys know so they can judge it and to see where that fits. And then lift communities together. More and more we are just interesting things where, you know, we do things in our church where usually we just do them on our own. We'll do a service project, or we'll do something in the cultural hall and then take it over to a food bank and stuff. It's one sister, a public affairs director in California, she just said, we are so good at letting our light shine in the cultural hall. But, you know, you think about it, it's very true. We do a lot of things. A great example just in New Zealand, where the youth was going to do, the young single adults were doing an activity, and they were going to go see the prime minister. And they just thought, well, why do we go alone? Let's invite the young single Catholic adults as well. And they responded to it well, and suddenly both of them went, and they went to meet the prime minister, and he actually addressed the youth, and he got a feeling for this marvelous group of young people that are the future of New Zealand. So they leveraged an existing event and said, let's invite our interfaith people as well. Same thing goes with interfaith or community service. When we get involved in community service, maybe there are times where we could invite other faiths to join us, and together we can work together to lift the communities. Because as it was said early morning today for the mayor of Newark, he said, don't tell me what your religion is, show me what your religion does. Let's show the people in our communities the power, the value of religion, and then people may be more inclined to say, we need to protect religious freedom because this is good for our communities. Some cautions. For all of you who went to the previous or the session that's going on at the same time in the other room, religious freedom is a complex issue with many nuances. That's why, once again, as an institution, we have to be very careful, and also for us, we need to educate ourselves because religious freedom is complex, so we need to learn about it. That's why you're here at the conference, get a better feel for it so that you can also help educate other people. Just a quick example, we had a case here in the U.S. not too long ago where a mayor of a major city suddenly came under heavy fire for wanting to get rid of religious freedom because some sermons were actually a law firm had gone after some sermons. So we looked into it more carefully and talked to the members on the ground, and actually turned out that we had very good relations with this mayor, but that something definitely wrong had happened, that a law firm had overextended what they were supposed to do. But we were able to, in a civil manner, approach the mayor, make our concerns known. And last week, that same mayor declared one day the Day of Mormon Helping Hands because it had done so much in the city. So we want to be careful, and I think part of this whole conference is, how do we have civil dialogue? How do we get the people in the middle so that we can talk to each other in a civil way and not just have two echo chambers on both sides of the issue, fighting it out on social media? Personal versus institutional involvement, I think I covered that. And then carefully assess level of engagement when we do get involved. Carefully look at the situation. I think as we talked before in the previous session, I actually had a director of the Coordinating Council, public affairs director from Philadelphia. She serves on the board, on the Interfaith Board in Philadelphia. And she got up and just made a few comments. And she said, you know, so often the tendency is we're going to go picket, we're going to go protest, we're going to do. And we in the church really don't get involved at that level. So she said she had a presentation to the whole interfaith board where she talked about how the church responded to the Book of Mormon play. So where we could have sent our members to the plays and picketed the plays, and, you know, instead we made a one sentence statement, you know, this play may entertain for an evening, but the Book of Mormon will teach you about Christ. For where's Lyman? This is, he's the main author of that statement. What was the statement, Lyman? Say it for all.
I've been on the spot. The play will
entertain for an evening.
The Book of Mormon's and Lyman scripture will
Influence your life, change your life for the, you know, change your life, yeah. Yeah. So thank you. But she gave that as an example, and they really resonated to it. And this recently they had a situation in Philadelphia where a company was coming in, and or not a company, but a group was coming in and putting anti-Muslim advertisements on buses driving around Philadelphia. And so the interfaith community came together, and instead of once again making it a picketing and, you know, this is terrible, we fight against this, but they turned it into a positive campaign. They wanted to give a positive message because of the presentation she had made. They said, we want to do something similar. So then they focused to get to know and understand and really kind of changed the tone of how they were coming out in defense of the Muslim community in Philadelphia together. So just as a summary of our presentation, get to know people of other faiths, become friends. Doesn't mean we need to have baptize them right away. Work together in your community, educate the community, develop a speaker bureau on religious freedom. These are just ideas. Do you have specialists that could go around and maybe speak and explain religious freedom better? Monitor threats and collaborate with local organizations, develop alliances that will speak out on religious freedom. You know, one final example, the church recently launched, it started in San Jose, a website, justserve.org, where community groups can post service opportunities. And missionaries, their hours are increased from 4 hours to 10 hours a week where they can go out and serve in the community. Now, when they're in that situation, they're not allowed to talk about the gospel, or they're not proselytizing during that time, but they can answer questions. Well, one of the areas they helped was a soup kitchen in Santa Clara in California. And the Catholic priest there, they feed about 135 people a day. And he was going on vacation. And so the missionaries would come and help and serve. And so when he was gone on vacation, the priest tells a story that the lady that works there helps out, asks the missionary, say, well, you pray, don't you? And they said, yes, we do. We want you to bless the food. So the missionary started blessing the food. Well, the Catholic priest comes back after 2 weeks and he wants to do his prayer over the food, and suddenly the homeless people say, no, we want those two to say the prayer, because they say, you know, help Greg in this job interview that's coming up. They're more specific. But the reason why I tell it is, our beliefs may differ, but still we came together, we were able to kind of laugh, the priest was able to laugh about the differences, but together we were able to lift the community better. So when we come together, and just like the example of Welfare Square, come together and help our communities, more and more people come to realize the value of faith and be attracted to these groups of people making a difference in their community. So that takes us to the final, and that's thank you for coming. And do you have any questions? And we strategically left only 3 minutes for questions. And he's always a difficult question asker, so I'm going to go to you first.
The video clips that you played, where can we access them? And is there one, in fact, being made involving Muslims?
We're looking at that. That's a little bit more challenging because you've got different groups. So yes, the answer to that is yes, and it's on the Public Affairs Network. If you have Public Affairs, where do you live?
I'm the Public Affairs Director of my state, but I want to get a hold of it.
So you automatically have, access to these if you go to publicaffairs.ldschurch.org. Okay. You'll find those videos.
Downloadable.
Yeah, they're downloadable too. And I'll go here. Yes. After him? No, I'll take you first because you're ladies first. He always asks really tough questions. So
I hope I can be bold but not overbearing.
Please be.
My response to this presentation is that it's very helpful.
Yeah.
But it's more PR and good relations, which I feel the church has been doing the whole time. And people of other faiths have been doing the whole time. And we have some really critical issues now. And am I just imagining that this seems more like damage control than actual action? And I don't mean it.
No. This is good. Please say it.
Radical approach. Yeah. But there are things that we can do that would explain why people of faith believe the way they do. For example, about marriage, that are more active. So if you, I'm going to use a sports metaphor, but. Yeah. If you have a basketball team that only plays defense, you will play basketball, but you have to have offense. And I don't mean offending. You don't have to be offending, but if you're in a real conflict, which Elder Packer's metaphor of the football team long ago really comes to my mind right now, you still have to play to win the game. And so,
yeah.
As much as I want to be civil and respectful, I also want to speak the truth with love and power. So that is my question.
So
about how can we, we're nice people.
Yeah.
Okay. But when we're not dealing with nice things, we'll be accused of not being nice, but we can still, like, I'll just give one quick example. I wrote a response to an article on a debate on marriage, and some of my colleagues didn't want me to write it. Because when they talked about that article about gay marriage debate, they just wanted to talk about how it might damage the church. So they didn't want me to actually address the issues in that article. I did, and it got published at a University of Chicago journal. And I just think we're sometimes so wanting to be nice.
I have to agree with her awful wholeheartedly. I just watched too much. I am with the AME Church. I did grow up Mormon. I found a black relative that we hid so we could have the priesthood. So it's really a family issue we're dealing with. But I see continually from religion, there's more damage control going on than actually resolving things and dealing with things the way. If you ask the further question, for 30 years I've sat and listened to, of all faiths, people have been abused in the churches. No wonder you're losing everybody. No one can trust. The trust of faith in churches has gone because it's clearly of that issue. And I found repeatedly leaders in Catholicism, Mormonism, all over, as I served in Young Women's and Relief Society, that there was no listening going on. There was just damage control. No one had the real faith to say, let's go figure out a way to get these people healed. And I think if you understood their journey, you would see why they're in the same-sex exploration. It's part of their healing process. And that's at least what I've learned. And I love that you're at the Utah Community Foundation, because that's where I'm at. And we're trying to deal with those issues in the community. And that's where I have a voice, because I'm a female. I want control of the money. I've gone to nonprofits so I can have that. Don't do damage control. See the real needs. Know that most of your population of women are now single. It's been that way over 10 years. That's why the single women's vote crushed Mitt Romney, because he only carried the marriage women for a large, but the single women, we rule. You're going to lose your control if you don't open and address the issues. Don't damage your control. Get down deep and get solutions to resolve why the faiths are struggling.
And as a former member of the Utah Legislature, I would echo those two opinions. I mean, I feel like in many respects I'm at a pacifist convention when we're at war. And I think we've done things, I think we've actually done things that have actually hurt the movement. As somebody that has children, teenagers that go to school just a couple blocks from here, we've lost that generation.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is because they don't see a standing for anything. And so that's my only, I guess, feedback. I feel like it's great academics, but it doesn't, where the rubber meets the road, it doesn't help me as a parent, my 15 and 18 year old.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't help me in the legislature. We've lost things because we've made mistakes. I don't hear anybody saying we're making mistakes, or how did we get here? Because that's my frustration.
Can I ask my difficult question?
I should have gone right to you, yes.
No, it's not. I'm a fourth or fifth generation Mormon, just returned from a full-time mission with my wife, where we defended freedom of religion. So I'm just saying this to set the context here. Two of our seven children are gay, the last two. They're out of church, like every other gay person in the state of Utah and virtually in the church, because there's no love for them at all. Now, you talk about your hurt elsewhere. Let me tell you about the hurt. Utah leads the nation in suicides between the ages of 18 and 25. No one wants to own up to the reason for it. So when we're talking about our freedom of religion here, there's a personal level. My 12-year-old granddaughter, when she got her Especially for Youth pamphlet, read in there that homosexuals and homosexual behavior are sinful and an abomination to God. With tears in her eyes, she goes to our daughter, who's her mother, and says, but my uncle and aunt who are gay, they're not an abomination to God, surely? They're my uncle and aunt. I know them. They're loving and they're friendly and they're happy people. Why does it say here that God hates them, they're sinners, and they're an abomination?
Now we
might differ on who said what to whom and where the theology is here, but I tell you, it's very, very light.
The person that's heard those stories for 30 years, we cannot turn our back on this community. We created a lot of that problem by not getting on it in the Boy Scouts. I had a father who was a state president, mission president. He didn't get on it. I handled it in California. And I had a hard time getting everybody to handle it, to get this pedophile down, because I didn't want the family name to go. But I couldn't get any of the men to listen. And so I thought, I've got to go to nonprofit. I've got to go to a foundation where I can sit and be equal and have finances that will be respected to get to these problems. And so you got to get the rubber to hit the road on these issues. These gay people, a lot of them are just exploring. They're trying to heal. You'll find that. And there are studies showing that. The religion's created a lot of this problem by not really helping these families or helping the pedophiles, the perpetrators. And then you throw it out with the same-sex thing. I can see why they're mad. I mean,
let me just say, we've got to wrap this up. But let me just say, this kind of discussion, I think, is healthy.
Good.
And it's important.
That's what I would say.
That's why I think if we had different feelings about